The COVID-19 pandemic has had far-reaching consequences beyond our health. People who've lost jobs or had their hours cut could be at risk of losing their homes, too. Our next guest says wealthy landlords are ready to buy up properties as 3.5 million mortgages are in trouble. Ryan Dezember writes about finance, energy, real estate, and more for The Wall Street Journal. He wrote the book Underwater, How Our American Dream of Homeownership Became a Nightmare. I spoke with him a few weeks ago about what could be in store for landlords and renters in the COVID-19 pandemic and beyond. Your article is titled, Millions Are House Rich But Cash Poor, Wall Street Landlords Are Ready. What do you mean by house rich and cash poor?
Well, you know, unlike the housing crisis from a little over a decade ago, when homes weren't worth what people had paid, now home prices have really risen in recent years, particularly this year. We've had some of the strongest home price gains in years, you know, year over year this summer, as people, you know, take advantage of low interest rates and you know, want to find a house in the suburbs to get that home office and, you know, a yard for the kids and the dog. And that means that people have a lot of equity in their homes this time around. The problem is millions of people are jobless right now. So we're seeing a lot of delinquent mortgages. A lot of mortgages ending up in forbearance. And eventually, you know, payments are going to have to be made once forbearance expires with lenders, or the government, you know, federal regulators say, okay, you know, lenders, you can foreclose again. So unlike last time when people were forced out of their homes and they couldn't sell them and the prices kind of kept falling because they were sold, you know, for fire sale prices on the courthouse steps, now you have a situation where people might not be able to afford their house going forward, their monthly payments, but they have a lot of equity in the home. So you could see some weird like forced sales where people actually walk away with some money, unlike last time where, you know, you might have walked away with a debt even after you'd lost your home. And the Wall Street firms that came out of the last crash, who bought homes by the tens of thousands on the courthouse steps and turned them into rentals, those companies have become so profitable that they want more homes and they're paying full price. So they're ready for those people to, you know, basically have problems maintaining their payments and have to sell. Or foreclosed.
That's really interesting in your reporting, because you talk about how we're dealing with big time rental companies as opposed to what you referred to as mom and pop operations before. What does it look like to be a rental organization right now?
Well, it looks like there's a lot of room to run. These companies, as I mentioned, you know, the biggest, say, 10 or 12, they probably don't have more than 5% or so of all the rental homes in the U.S. And I'm talking single family properties. So, you know, your classic suburban home, basically. Most of the bulk of those, and throughout history, were sort of like a small business, you know, the doctor or dentist in town, or the, you know, the heirs would, you know, you'd inherit grandma's house and turn it into a rental property, or maybe you'd buy a fixer upper down the street and have it for income. There was never really a way for like Wall Street to conquer single family residential like they did in commercial property, offices, apartments, shopping malls, warehouses. They kind of conquered all that and own a big piece of that, but they could never do homes because it was so hard to manage them. You know, they were expensive, but they got this opportunity to get started when they bought homes for 40, 50 cents on the dollar during the foreclosure crisis. And incidentally, that happened when the iPhone and the iPad and all this cloud, you know, mobile technology came about. And they were able not only to orchestrate, you know, one of probably history's great land grabs, but also, you know, to manage the properties efficiently thereafter. And so they've made this business now where they can afford to pay full price for a home and still make a good yield for their investors. And that's just, you know, right now, There's a mountain of money sitting in property funds that a lot of that money would go to buy Manhattan skyscrapers and shopping malls and things. None of those investments look really appealing right now. Those are very uncertain asset classes. But what's certain is Americans, there's a lot of people coming, a lot of millennials coming of age that'll be moving into suburban settings with children that they want to get in good schools. And so they have this demographic sort of wave coming at them. And that's just really been accelerated by the pandemic, where people want to have space between their neighbors, space within their homes because they're spending more time in them. And, you know, interest rates have never been lower.
And that preference for staying in your home and the fact that these rental companies are using kind of what they used to do with commercial properties with residential properties leads us to this conversation about sale leaseback. What does that mean?
Yeah, so that there's some firms trying to float that as an idea. With so many people having equity in their home, but potentially having problems maintaining their payments and holding on to their homes, there's some investors are thinking they can approach people, buy their house, and basically effectively rent it right back to those people who then have money in the bank again from the profits of selling their home. That may just be a niche market. There's also a case to be made. There could be people who have life events planned. Maybe they have children with one or two more years in school, and they're going to move as soon as the kids graduate and go off to college or leave home. But, real estate prices are high now, and there's an uncertain, trajectory there with so much job loss and all these other economic problems we have. So there could be a case to be made for some people wanting to sort of cash out now but not move now. So it could just be a niche product. But given the circumstances of so many people having a lot of equity, being house rich and, being cash poor, having much reduced or maybe no income, where that could be an option. The folks on Wall Street and these companies are they're looking to get houses any way they can. They have historically high occupancy right now. They've had historically on-time rent payments. Like, people are still making the rent generally for the higher end homes that they rent. And, they're looking to add them because that's how they grow, right? And they have such a small piece of the pie, there's a lot of room to grow.
Ryan Dezember has written about how economic pressure because of the coronavirus could force property owners to sell, could force them to become renters, and how rental companies are handling this. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Ryan, do we have any numbers to help us understand how many people are facing this situation financially?
Well, there's millions of mortgages in forbearance. What we don't know is, there could be some that are, strategic, or there could be some where lenders have, requested not to make payments for some reason other than job loss. But the big jump in it has coincided with, the economic shutdown due to the pandemic. On top of that, there's a lot of people that don't know that you can, if you're having problems paying your mortgage, unless you have certain, very high-end, very pricey mortgages, but the bulk of Americans can call up their lender and request up to like a year of forbearance. Usually they'll just put the payments, back into what you owe. It's hard to tell what those numbers are, but that could be an additional, upward of a million additional people beyond the millions who have basically raised their hand and told their lenders, we can't make our mortgage payments right now.
Do we know anything about demographics? I mean, is it affecting different races or people who live in specific areas differently? Do we know that yet?
I don't think we really do yet. It's a big cross-section. This whole pandemic has really shown that, like, maybe some people who thought of themselves as being in the middle class maybe aren't there anymore because of the way that certain businesses have been affected more than others. And then, there's this class of people who now are like sort of working from home, sort of professional class. And then there's people who maybe need to be in service and stuff who are out of work. So we're probably seeing it more down the lines of economic strata. And it'll be hard to say what comes back. But, working at the Wall Street Journal, we see just a steady procession of big companies announcing huge layoff numbers from, airlines, manufacturers, oil companies. So these are jobs. These are well-paying, like, middle and upper middle class jobs that are being lost. So it's not all, the poor and then the inner city. And also, if you think about it, like, the service workers and some of the lower paying jobs, those people are less likely to be homeowners anyway. They have sort of their own problems with rent. And of course, renters don't have the sort of protections that homeowners do in terms of forbearance and things like that. So they're sort of in a separate predicament, I would say, and that this is really, affecting like what we would think of as the middle class and sort of redrawing those lines.
Well, and if you are able to get out of a mortgage that you can't really afford anymore, less scathed than you would have 10 years ago, then you become a renter and then you open yourself up to those vulnerabilities that you didn't have before.
Exactly. And, one of the things with having a corporate landlord that's really different than, traditionally you might have a landlord that's somebody that you, you know, see in church, or it's, or your kids go to school, or you, you know, you see them around town, and maybe they, you have a personal relationship, and there's flexibility and negotiating built in. Now, I'm not saying these big companies want their tenants out. In fact, their ideal is to have tenants stay for as long as possible. They lose a lot of money getting rid of people and turning places over. So they're doing everything they can to keep tenants in. But, you know, they also, these are corporations. Their duty is a fiduciary duty to their shareholders. And they have pressure to constantly earn more money and to beat targets that Wall Street analysts set for them and what investors expect. So they are under pressure to raise rents in a way that, you know, an individual investor, somebody who lives in town, probably isn't, you know, in that same boat.
Lots to look forward to and keep an eye on. Ryan, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That was Ryan December. He writes about finance, energy, real estate, and more for the Wall Street Journal. He wrote the book Underwater: How Our American Dream of Homeownership Became a Nightmare. I spoke with him a few weeks ago about the COVID-19 pandemic's economic impact on renters and landlords and homeowners.